on the additional film, sir, we have a much better readout on what we had initially. There's good evidence that there are backup missiles for each of the four launchers at each of the three sites, so that there would be twice the number, or a total of eight, could eventually be erected. This would mean a capability of 16 or possibly 24 missiles. We feel, on the basis of information that we presently have, that these are solid propellant inertial guidance missiles with 1,100 mile range rather than the oxygen propellant radar control, primarily because we have no indication of any radar or any indication of any oxygen equipment. And it would appear to be logical from an intelligence estimate viewpoint that if they are going to this much trouble, that they would go ahead and put in the 1,100 miles because of the tremendously increased threat coverage.
What is this map?
That shows the circular range.
What is this drawing?
Capability.
Is this drawn in relation to this information?
No, sir. It was drawn in some time ago, I believe, but the ranges there are the nominal ranges of the missile rather than the maximum.
Circles are added.
That's a 1020 circle as against 1100.
No, but I'm just wondering, the San Diego to Los Banos, where these missiles are?
Yes, sir. No,
I wonder how many of these were printed out.
No, the circle is drawn already on the map, Mr. President.
Oh, I see. Is that a printed?
No, that's on top.
I see. It is printed.
It would appear that with this type of missile, with a solid propellant and inertial guidance system, that it could well be operational within 2 weeks as we look at the pictures now. And once operational, they could fire on very little notice. They would have a refire rate of from 4 to 6 hours for each launcher.
What about the vulnerability of such a missile to bullets?
They're vulnerable. They're not nearly as vulnerable as the oxygen propellant, but they are vulnerable to ordinary rifle fire. We have no evidence whatsoever of any nuclear warhead storage near the field launchers. However, ever since last February, we have been observing an unusual facility which now has automatic anti-aircraft weapon protection. This is at Beihu. There are some similarities, but also many points of dissimilarity between this particular facility and the national storage sites in the Soviet Union. It's the best candidate for a site, and we have that marked for further surveillance. However, there is really totally inadequate evidence to say that there is a nuclear storage capability now. These are field-type launchers. They have mobile support, erection and checkout equipment. And they have a four-in-line deployment pattern in launchers, which is identical. Complex is about 5 miles apart, representative of the deployments that we note in the Soviet Union for similar missiles.
General, how long would you say we had before these? This is the best of your ability for the ones we now know will be ready to fire.
Well, our people estimate that these could be fully operational within 2 weeks. Now, this would be the total complex. If they're the oxygen type, we have no. It'll be considerably longer since we don't have any indication of the oxygen refueling there, nor any radars.
This wouldn't rule out the possibility that one of them might be operational very much.
No, one of them could be operational much sooner. this has been being put in since probably early September. We have had two visits of a Soviet ship that has an 80-foot hold capacity sideways. And this about so far is the only delivery vehicle that we would have any suspicion that they came in on. And that came in late August and one in early September.
Why would they have to be sideways?
Including our iron bark sources as well as from range firings, which we have been vetting for several years as to the capability. But I would have to get the analysts in here to give you the play-by-play account.
Pat, we don't know of any 65-foot Soviet missile that has a range of, say, 15 miles, do we?
15 miles? No, we certainly
don't. In other words, if there are missiles this size, there are missiles of considerable range.
I tried to prove today, I'm satisfied that these were not MRBMs, and I worked long on it. I got our experts out, and I could not find evidence that would support any conclusion other than that they were MRBMs. Now, whether they're 1,100 miles, 600 miles, 900 miles, is still a guess, in my opinion. But that they are MRBMs seems the most probable assumption. Well,
I apparently agree. I can't get the weight of it.
General Taylor coming up. Yes, Mr. President. Are you finished, General?
Yes, sir, I think that's
Mr. President, we've had some further discussion this afternoon. We'll be working on the further this evening, but I mentioned certain points that some of us are concerned about. The one is the chance that this might be the issue on which Castro would like to break with Moscow if he knew that he went deadly jeopardy. Now, this is one chance in 100, possibly. But in any event, we're very much interested in the possibility of a direct message to Castro, as well as Khrushchev, might make some sense here before an actual strike is put on. Mr. Martin, perhaps you would outline the kind of message to Castro that we had in mind.
This would be an oral message to a third party. First, describing just what we know about what exists in the missile site, so he knows that we are informed about what's going on. Second, to point out that the issues this raises as far as the U.S. security is concerned, it's a breach of two of the points that you have made public. First, the ground-to-ground missile, and second, obviously, it's a Soviet-operated base in Cuba. Thirdly, this raises the gravest problems for Castro as we see it. First place, by this action, the Soviets have threatened him with attack from the United States, and therefore the overthrow of his regime, used his territory to make this, to put him in this jeopardy. And secondly, the Soviets are talking to other people about the possibility of bargaining this support and these missiles against concessions in Berlin and elsewhere, and therefore threatening to bargain him away. In these circumstances, we wonder whether he realizes the position that he's been put in and the way the Soviets are using him. Then go on to say that we will have to inform our people of the threat that exists here. We need to take action about it in the next day or so. We'll have to do this unless we receive word from him that he's prepared to take action to get the Soviets out of the site. You have to show us that not only by statements, privately or publicly, but by action. We intend to keep close surveillance by overflights of the site to make sure to know what is being done, but we'll have to know that he is doing something to remove this threat in order to withhold the action that we intend that we will be compelled to take. If Castro feels that an attempt by him to take the kind of action that we're suggesting to him would result in serious difficulties for him within Cuba, we at least want him to know that, or asked to convey to him and remind him of the statement that you, Mr. President, made a year and a half ago, to the effect that there are two points that are non-negotiable. One is the Soviet tie and presence, and the second is aggression in Latin America. This is a hint, but no more than that, that we might have sympathy and help for him in case he got into trouble trying to throw the whole line communist and the Soviets out. Give him 24 hours to respond.
The disadvantage in that is, of course, the advance notice. If he judges that we would not, in this in such approach here, say exactly what we would do, but it might, of course, lead him to bring up mobile anti-aircraft weapons around these missiles themselves, or take some other action that would make the strike more difficult. But there is that motive. There are two
have some intimation requiring some preparatory steps from a security point of view. One or another of those governments could easily be overthrown. Venezuela, for example, Guatemala, Bolivia, Chile, possibly even Mexico. And therefore, the question will arise as to whether we should not somehow indicate to them in some way the seriousness of the situation so they can take precautionary steps, whether we tell them exactly what we have in mind with them or not. The other is the NATO problem. We would estimate that the Soviets would almost certainly take some kind of action somewhere for us to take an action of this sort without letting personal allies know on a matter which could subject them to very great danger.
Target system, it's really threatened the United States, and take it out with one of our crackers.
taking out the those fighters, bombers?
Fighters, the bombers. IL-28s may turn up in this photography. It's not at all unlikely there's something there.
If you could do that one day.
We think that in the first strike, we'd get a great majority of it. We'll never get it all, Mr. President. But we then have to come back day after day for several days. We said 5 days, perhaps, to do the complete job. Meanwhile, we could then be making up our mind as whether or not to go and invade the island. I'm very much impressed with the need for a time something like 5 to 7 days for this air purpose because of the parachute aspect of the proposed invasion. You can't take parachute formations, close formations of troop carrier planes in the face of any air opposition threat. So the first job before the any land attack, including parachutes, would be really cleaning up the mix and the accompanying aircraft.
Mr. President, could I outline 3 courses of action we have considered and speak very briefly on each one? The first is what I would call a political course of action, which we follow some of the possibilities that Secretary Rusk mentioned this morning by approaching Castro, by approaching Khrushchev, by discussing with our allies an overt and open approach politically to the problem, endeavoring to solve it. This seemed to me to likely lead to no satisfactory result, and it almost stops subsequent military action, because the danger of starting military action after they acquire a nuclear capability is so great, I believe we would decide against it, particularly if that nuclear capability included aircraft as well as missiles, as it well might at that point. A second course of action we haven't discussed that lies in between the military course we began discussing a moment ago and the political course of action is a course of action that would involve declaration of open surveillance, a statement that we would immediately impose a blockade against offensive weapons entering Cuba in the future, and an indication that with our open surveillance reconnaissance, which we would plan to maintain indefinitely into the future, we would be prepared to immediately attack the Soviet Union in the event that Cuba made any offensive move against this country.
Attack who?
Soviet Union, in the event that Cuba made any offensive move against this country. Now, this lies short of military action against Cuba, direct military action against Cuba. It has some major defects. But the third course of action is any one of these variants of military action directed against Cuba, starting with an air attack against the missiles. The chiefs are strongly opposed to so limited an air attack, but even so limited an air attack is a very extensive air attack. It's not 20 sorties or 50 sorties or 100 sorties, but probably several hundred sorties. We haven't worked out the details. It's very difficult to do so when we lack certain intelligence that we hope to have tomorrow or the next day. But it's a substantial air attack. And to move from that into the more extensive air attacks against the MiGs, against the airfields, against the potential nuclear storage sites, against the radar installations, against the SAM sites, means, as Max suggested, possibly 700 to 1,000 sorties per day for 5 days. This is the very, very rough plan that the chiefs have outlined, and it is their judgment that that is the type of air attack that should be carried out. To move beyond that into an invasion following the air attack means the application of tens of thousands, between 90 and over 150,000 men to the invasion forces. It seems to me almost certain that any one of these forms of direct military action will lead to a Soviet military response of some type, someplace in the world. It may well be worth the price. Perhaps we should pay that. But I think we should recognize that possibility, and moreover, we must recognize it in a variety of ways. We must recognize it by trying to deter it, which means we probably should alert SAC, probably put on an airborne alert, perhaps take other alert measures. These bring risks of their own associated with them. It means we should recognize it by mobilization. Almost certainly we should accompany the initial airstrike with at least a partial mobilization. We should accompany an invasion following an airstrike with a large-scale mobilization, a very large-scale mobilization, certainly exceeding the limits of the authority we have from Congress requiring declaration, therefore, of a national emergency. We should be prepared in the event of even a small airstrike, and certainly in the event of a larger airstrike, for the possibility of a Cuban uprising, which would force our hand in some way, either force the difficulty, it seems to me, is I completely agree that there isn't any doubt that if we announced that there were MRVM sites going up, that that would change. We would secure a good deal of political support after my statement that the fact that we indicated our desire to restrain is really put the burden on the Soviet. On the other hand, the very fact of doing that makes the military lose all the advantages of our strike, because if we announce that it's there, it's quite obvious to them that we're going to probably do something about it, I would assume. Now, I don't know, that seems to me what we ought to be thinking about tonight is if we made an announcement that the intelligence is revealed, that there are, if we did the message to Khrushchev, I don't think the Castro message, I don't think he paid much attention to it any more than over a period of time, it might have some effect. He's not going to suddenly back down and change. I don't think he plays it that way. So I had a note to Khrushchev. My press statement was so clear about how we wouldn't do anything under these conditions, under the conditions that we would. You must know that we're going to find out. It seems to me you just...
That's, of course, why he's been very, very explicit with us in communications to us about how dangerous this is.
That's right.
The test statement and his other messages.
He's initiated the danger, really, hasn't he? He's playing with God, not us. So we could...
And his statement to Kohler on the Sunday, his visit in